Have you ever said yes when you really wanted to say no? Have you ever put someone else's needs ahead of your own and then you felt exhausted, resentful, or even invisible after? A lot of people think that that is just being kind, that is just being a good person. But what if it's not? What if what you're actually doing is abandoning yourself? So today we're talking about something that so many people are doing, even without realizing it, people pleasing. And the truth is, it looks good on the outside, but on the inside, it's super draining, it's confusing, and it's slowly disconnecting you from who you really are. So if you've ever felt tired of giving, tired of overthinking, or tired of not feeling seen, this episode is for you. Today, I am joined by Kalmini Wood, an expert in emotional resilience, boundaries, and self-worth. Kalmini helps people break free from patterns like people-pleasing and overgiving so they can actually feel grounded and control of their lives. Kalmini, let's start here. How would you define people-pleasing? So a lot of people don't even realize that they're doing it. So how would you define it?
That's a great question. I think for years I thought that people-pleasing was just simply saying yes to everything. What I've learned over my studying and the work that I do is that people-pleasing is actually a survival mechanism. Many of us have learned to do that to stay safe in different relationship dynamics. And a lot of times it was learned very early on. And it doesn't have to be something that was learned through a big T, so to speak, big T trauma. A lot of times it's just through different experiences or different messages we've heard. And in order to maybe keep the peace, right? Like if we lived in if our environment happened to be very volatile, many individuals will learn to people please because that's a way through to keep things calm and safe. From my perspective, I know that I learned to people please to actually be accepted. Having a name like Kamini, being the only person of color in a school of mainly white children in a little suburban town in Connecticut, I wanted to belong and to accept and be accepted. And the way to do that was to make sure people were happy with me. So what did that mean? The survival mechanism was, say yes, do over function, over give. I say lots of people pleasers tend to be over functioners. They tend to be over givers. They tend to be the individuals who are trying so hard to make sure nobody is upset in general or upset with them.
Yeah, I can relate to that. And I remember from a very young age learning very quickly that when I obeyed or just went with the flow, I guess, how it made everyone just really happy. And then, as a very sensitive individual, anytime there was conflict or a feeling of, disconnection, I could really feel that in my nervous system. And I felt it really dysregulated me. And so I also just learned to say yes to everything and do things for other people to keep my nervous system safe. And so it's a really challenging place to be in, because it's hard to stand up and be an individual, especially when you're sensitive. Can you relate to that?
100%. I say I'm actually a highly sensitive person. So and I'm extraordinarily empathic too. I'm an empath by nature. So I will pick up on a lot. So I can pick up on tension very quickly as an example. And the moment my nervous system feels that, it immediately goes into that survival mode that I was mentioning. It's like, oh gosh, this is not, it's not safe for that to happen. How can I fix it? What do I need to do to make this okay? And so a lot of people pleasers will find that. And I love how you brought up the nervous system because I do think that we're now finally starting to bring this to the forefront of this isn't only cognitive. We're talking about our actual nervous system and how our nervous system has identified things for our survival. So as somebody who would people please, my nervous system would go into, oh my gosh, something bad is really going to happen if I don't figure out a way to smooth things over, right? To make everybody okay. And so the nervous system learns that that's the way to stay safe. However, the nervous system also remains on guard all the time. If our nervous system is on guard all the time, what naturally happens? Our cortisol levels stay elevated, and we're constantly in this place of anxiety. We're constantly measuring, we're constantly walking on eggshells. And we wonder why so many of us have autoimmune issues, because when our bodies are holding on to that cortisol, holding on to that anxious, it's holding on to that stress, eventually our physical body is going to pay the price for that.
Yeah. And also, I just remember like when I was really stuck in this pattern of people pleasing, that anytime I would say no, I would feel like I was shrunk to like this big. And I felt so bad about it, even though like I could have a million meetings booked in that day and be super busy and actually like logically not be able to do it. But for some reason, I still feel guilty for saying no. And so I found myself over explaining and over apologizing. And I didn't like that feeling either.
No, it feels just as bad, I think. But you make a great point. I do think that as people pleasers, we will try to say no, and then we guilt ourselves immediately. And then the guilt, shame, oh, I'm a bad person because I said no to XYZ or this person. As a mom, and a people pleaser, that was a struggle for me. How do you not take on every single thing? Like, my day is completely booked. I'm running a business. I've got all these things going on. And then the school is asking somebody to bake cupcakes. And here I am, and I have zero time in my day, but they need this for whatever, either the bake sale, or my kids were very involved in sports and things like that. So there's constantly like a sign up to bring snacks or what have you. And then if I said no, I felt so guilty around. But I literally couldn't get to the store to purchase whatever needed to be purchased and get it to the school. And yet somehow I made myself this bad person for saying no. And I think that's a big part of the work for people pleasers, is actually learning to say no and then sit in the discomfort of that without going into a shame spiral.
Yeah, exactly. So what are some of the signs that someone is stuck in this pattern?
Well, I would say the very first thing is if you're constantly feeling exhausted and you're just like, I'm so tired, I can't get a breath, that's a good indication that maybe we're overbooking ourselves, to your point of I'm not saying no to anything, but my schedule is already packed. The other thing that I would say is, I started to notice my resentment was building. So people pleasers who are stuck in the pattern, they will find themselves maybe more irritable, maybe more anxious, maybe noticing that they're, like I mentioned, the resentment starts to grow. Those are good moments to say, okay, what's going on here? Is it possible? Defending myself? Am I possibly overfunctioning here? Am I saying yes to things that I need to say no to? So yes, like one of the basic things is, exhaustion. That's usually a very good sign that we are overbooking ourselves. But those are the other ways to just pay attention and be like, maybe I am in this cycle of constantly doing for others or making sure everybody else is okay, and I'm not even checking in with myself.
100%. So, what do you think then the difference between being kind and people pleasing is?
Well, I would say that being kind is, caring for others, but you're not forgetting your own needs. I think with people pleasers, what happens is we lose touch with what we need as human beings as well. And so we completely self-abandon. In order to be a kind, loving person, it does not mean that we also need to self-abandon. We can still honor our needs and still care and have empathy for others. And that's the other thing too, is that empathy doesn't mean that we abandon ourselves in order to take care of the other person. We can feel for the other person and we can feel with the other person, but we don't need to actually do all the things for the other person.
Right, 100%. And I mean, people pleasing doesn't disappear out of nowhere. I believe it starts somewhere. Do you think that it forms from childhood, or where do you think it begins?
So I do think for a lot of us, it does form from childhood, early life experiences. However, I also believe that our life experiences can also cultivate it as we go through life. So as I mentioned, my people pleasing definitely started when I was younger. It was a mechanism to fit in and belong. as so it started there. However, it continued to form in different relationships I had because certain people that I was in relationship with were not exactly the healthiest of individuals, somewhat toxic, if you will. And in order to make sure that conflict was avoided in those relationships, the people pleasing, escalated. It was, I don't have any needs. I don't have any wants. What do you need? How can I make sure you're happy? How can I make sure your emotions are regulated? And so it continued to really cultivate that people pleasing. So for me, it started, but then it expanded and was reinforced with different relationships that I had into adulthood. So I do think for many of us, to answer your question, for many of us, it is formed early. However, it can also be cultivated throughout our life and whatever experiences we're having.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's so related to codependency. Because when I was not regulated and when I was in toxic relationships, I was so focused on my partner's nervous system and needs that when he was not regulated, it would dysregulate me to the point of like not being able to sleep, you know? And so I think it's so connected to all of these traits. So it really, I think, comes down to that abandonment of self and how when we're reacting that way and acting that way, it's like we're not safe in our own bodies as we feel unsafe. Do you believe that it's connected to feeling safe, accepted, or loved?
Oh, 100%. It's feeling. Again, I mentioned it before, being seen, being acknowledged, but absolutely safety is a huge part of it. I call myself a psychological safety nerd, and it's because without feeling that sense of emotional safety, that it's really hard to show up and to express ourselves. If we don't feel that we're in an environment where it is safe to do that, especially for people pleasers. Again, we go back to measuring everything we say, but we're losing our authentic voice. And so then what does that lean into? Well, now we're self-abandoning because we're not even speaking up and saying the things that we need to say. We're not speaking to what we need. And I see this with the gamut of individuals that I get to work with. I'm privileged to work with teenagers all the way through adults, and teenagers are dealing with this too. If they have those people-pleasing tendencies because it's a survival mechanism, maybe it's not 100% emotionally safe to speak up within their family environment, and no shame or judgment. It's just to notice the response that they get, the words that they're met with when they say something doesn't create that safety. Well, then they stop speaking up, they start to self-abandon, and they have a really hard time even naming what it is that they need because they learn for survival purposes to not have any needs, right? And
Right.
that's just teenagers. Adults, same thing. If they're in an environment, I do deal with people in workplaces all the time who end up people-pleasing in the workplace because it's not psychologically safe to share their ideas because they fear humiliation or getting just, from a political standpoint within their office environment, they're going to get shunned for having a different idea. Well, now they're also losing their voice and self-abandoning. And now they feel discontented and completely dissociated from their work. So it can affect us in all different ages and stages and environments that we're in.
Yeah, 1,000%. And it's interesting because on the surface, being a people pleaser can look and feel like success. You know, human beings like to be needed and they like to feel like they have a purpose. And so when people like you and they find you helpful and you're super dependable, that can really look like success. But really, like what's happening underneath is people are just becoming exhausted, right? And then the resentment comes in. And also, I find that people pleasers tend to get walked over. And it's not to anyone's fault, but really the people pleasers own because they're allowing themselves to be treated that way by not speaking up. And so that's where that resentment comes in. And then I find like the magic part of like recovering from it is when you do start speaking up, people actually start to look at you different and respect you a little bit more.
Yes, and I will say that sometimes when, oh, you said so many gold nuggets in there, so I want to not lose any of them, but you're right. I mean, when we people please, people get used to us doing that. And so they again, this isn't about judgment or shame, but if they get used to us doing that, then and I don't want to use the word fault, but we have a part in that, right? As a people pleaser, we have a part in these people and other people learning to depend on us taking care of things. But yes, we then start to get resentful of the fact that we're doing all the things, but it's very complicated because we also get reaffirmed for doing all the things because it's like, in my case, oh, Kamini will take care of it. Oh, Kamini will take care of it. And it's like, oh, well, that feels good, first of all. But second of all, there's this belief that if I don't take care of it, then who's going to take care of it? Right.
Right.
But to your point, once we start shifting out of that and look at us differently, and they're like, oh, wow, I have a newfound respect for her. The other group may have a problem with it. But my comeback to that is those may not be your people. They may have been the ones who have been benefiting from you not having any boundaries and from you overgiving and overfunctioning. And they may not be your people if they're not willing to potentially shift and change and grow along with you. And so sometimes you do see shifts in dynamics, and it is, there's grief involved, of course, when certain relationships shift and change. However, sometimes it's for your benefit, not always for the worse.
Exactly. When someone is stuck in this pattern of people pleasing, what happens to their identity?
I mean, to just boil it down, I think we end up losing our identity, right? Because we have, when we're people pleasing and it's always about making sure everyone else is okay and happy and their needs are being met, we lose touch with our own needs. And a lot of people pleasers lose touch with what's actually meaningful or brings themselves joy. Like what do they value as an individual human being? And so the identity gets lost. That's why, you and I were talking about the self-abandonment. It's because there's a self-abandonment that happens and you lose who you are outside of whatever relationships, you're showing up as that overgiver.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, we talked about people pleasing being so exhausting, but it's so exhausting, but it's so hard to change. Why do you think that is?
I believe that it's because it often we'll hear people talk about people pleasing, but we don't hear it in the context of fawning. So the four Fs, right? Fight, flight, freeze, and then the fourth one is fawn. Well, it's a survival mechanism. It's the way that we have learned to make sure that we don't get abandoned, to make sure that people are not unhappy with us, to make sure that we're not creating waves, to make sure that there's not conflict because conflict is scary, all of those things. So it's so hard to step out of it because the thought of not doing that is so scary. Because what does it mean if I don't people please, and now there's conflict. How we scare ourselves that I'm not going to survive. I mean, that's truly, if we really boil it down, there's a fear of my whole world is going to completely shatter. Again, these aren't conscious thoughts. This is what our nervous system has interpreted, right? It becomes this, like, I can't survive unless I do these things. It's kind of on the subconscious level. And so what we're really asking people to look at and to become aware of is not just the pattern, but it's then also recognizing the deep work that goes along with it and then being committed to, as I mentioned before, we have to learn to sit in that discomfort. The discomfort of sitting there and saying no and having somebody be upset with us and then recognizing, and the world is going to continue to spin. They get to be upset with us and have their feelings. And like I said, the world keeps spinning, life keeps moving, everything, we're actually okay. We're still surviving.
Yeah, 100%. I remember an old coach of mine telling me or asking me, what do you think is going to happen if you say no? And in my mind, I'm like, that is a really good point because like nothing is going to happen. Nothing's going to change. The world is still going to spin around. But my nervous system was reacting like my whole entire world was going to collapse. And that sounds really dramatic, but it's true. Like it literally feels like if you say no to something, that everything is going to collapse around you, and that's survival and safety is gone. So yeah, it's really difficult actually.
Yeah, and that's why I want us to really be like as transparent as possible, right? It is difficult because, as an example, as a mom, right? I would people please and overfunction. And I know full well that I would actually say, if I don't do this, I used to say this, if I take my foot off the gas pedal, everything is going to stop. Like, they're not going to get to where they need to be. Like, certain things are going to happen. But then I had to push myself to say, and then what? Again,
Right.
the world still spins. Like, yes, people are disappointed, but our life still continues, right? We still get to move forward. And truth be told, when I stopped people pleasing, I was giving, as a mom, I was giving my kids the opportunity to grow and to build their own agency and autonomy. Because when I'm over functioning and doing for them, they're not growing and becoming their own person and learning that they have the capability to do these things. So it's
Yeah.
not only we don't, and that's something that really resonated for me as a parent was, okay, if I actually break this pattern of people pleasing, I'm actually doing a service for my kids because I'm giving them an opportunity to now step into their own agency versus if I'm leaning into people pleasing, leaning into doing everything and leaning into making sure they never feel conflict, what am I actually robbing them of? Their ability to learn how to meet challenge, to their ability to learn how to navigate when there is conflict.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about some solutions to this. So, how does someone start shifting out of people pleasing?
Yeah, so the very first thing, which we've already talked about, is to become aware of it. We can't do anything unless we have awareness. Awareness is that doorway to change, right? And then it is, for many people, this is it's a pattern that's been there for years. So it's not like we can just, turn off the switch and be like, okay, I'm no longer going to people please. So what I would say is start small and build up. So find safe places where safe, right? Where you feel like, okay, this doesn't feel so scary if we're thinking about a 0 to 10 scale where I can start to say no to something, or I can maybe recognize when I'm overexplaining, as an example. People pleasers constantly overexplain, and just challenge yourself to answer a question without giving a 3-sentence explanation. Right? It's just like, no, that's not going to work for my schedule. And then just stop talking, right? That's like the very first thing. And do it in the places where, like I said, it feels safer. It doesn't feel as scary. And then we start to build up, right? So that we won't want to try to say no to something that feels uber scary, but maybe it's no, I'm not going to be able to bake cupcakes for this bake sale this time. As an example of something small where we don't feel so bad. We're not going to feel so guilty. The other thing is to really pay attention to when you do exert that no, or you do start to ha set those boundaries, because people pleasers struggle with boundaries, is really recognize when you are feeling that discomfort and naming that for yourself. Like, this is discomfort. This is actually an uncomfortable feeling because I'm doing something different. I'm saying no here. Naming it allows you to have space between the feeling and yourself, which allows you to then step into observer mode and recognize you don't have to do anything different. Right. Because a lot of
Exactly.
times we get stuck in what you mentioned earlier. It's that guilt and that shame. And then it's like, oh, no, I can do it. Never mind. I've got it. No problem. So just naming it and calling it out for yourself so that you start learning to sit with the discomfort and knowing that the world is still going on. Everything is fine.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I noticed that one thing to be aware of, though, is when you start shifting out of people pleasing and you start saying no and putting yourself first, is that the people that you're responding to are not going to be used to that. And so I remember an instance where, or it happens quite often, where I do say no and I don't overexplain, but because I don't explain myself, the person who's receiving the no or the message is feeling uneasy with the response because their nervous system isn't healed and they're looking for comfort in me making sure that I'm telling them that it's nothing to do with them. And so I feel like people almost feel uneasy when you start doing that because they're used to you going over and above to make them feel comfortable. Then when they almost feel abandoned by that, and I think that's a really challenging place to be as well, is being okay with someone else's discomfort in your
Yes.
response, because really we don't owe anybody an explanation for why we cannot do something.
Yes. And what you just said is, I think, spot on. And I know that I had that experience, and I've had that experience, and I'm sure we'll continue to have it. But I distinctly remember with one specific individual, she was so used to me constantly making sure she was happy, right? Whatever she needed was attended to. And when I really stepped into just saying no without that over explanation, she actually would start peppering me with questions. Like, well, what are you doing? Well, what are you doing instead? And all these things. And at first, I totally own it. I would then get into that old pattern. I'd start answering all the questions. And I too had to learn with I had to learn exactly what you said, which is, oh, this is her discomfort. I'm not responsible for making her feel comfortable. And I don't mean it in a cold way. It's just actually recognizing we are not responsible for making sure that other people that's theirs. They are responsible for working through whatever discomfort they have. And so I had to learn when she starts peppering me, that's her nervous system responding, but I can hold steady and grounded. And yeah, it's just not going to work for me. I don't have to answer all of the questions.
Exactly. And so how do you set those boundaries without feeling like you're hurting someone? Like, how do you make peace with that?
That is such a loaded question because that's a hard one, isn't it? Because I mean, as a people pleaser too, we would immediately go into saying, "Look, well, I'm a bad person." I actually say that it's self boundaries. Truth be told, it's not actually a boundary with the other person; it's a boundary with yourself, which is, look, we just were saying that's not my responsibility. It's okay for, in my case, it's okay for her to feel uncomfortable. It's okay for her to have that experience. That's not mine to own. And really holding steady with that self boundary, because truth be told, as people pleasers, we are responsible for saying, I no longer want to do this. I no longer want to overfunction. Well, what does that mean? That means that I'm responsible for catching myself before I'm overgiving or overexplaining or overdoing. That's not the other person's responsibility.
100%, 100%. So then let's talk about what a healthy boundary actually looks like. Can you give an example, and an action step so people can kind of see how this is illustrated and then try and relate it to their life?
I would say that a healthy boundary really boils down to what works for me and what doesn't, right? What am I okay with and what am I not okay with? And it's going to look different for different people. That's why to say what a healthy boundary it really is, it goes back to you, because my healthy boundary might look different from, let's say, my best friend's healthy boundary. And so it is in each domain that we would deal with. It's like, in our relationships, like even breaking that down in my friendships. What's okay versus what's not okay. When we think about different types of boundaries, there's financial boundaries, there's physical boundaries, there's mental boundaries. That's one that we a lot, well, many times we don't even think about, which is it okay for somebody to just, yes, it's okay for them to disagree with me, but where's my boundary line on how much I'm going to engage with somebody in terms of how they're speaking to me? This actually just came up with a client of mine in terms of his adult son talking to him. And we talked about it's okay for you to set a boundary that I'm not okay. I'm not going to continue a conversation with you if you're going to curse at me. That would be an example of a person setting a personal boundary in terms of what is okay in communication, what's not. Now, he's not telling the other person, you cannot curse. It's, I'm not okay. I'm not going to continue a conversation when somebody is cursing at me, and I am going to walk away. Not, you need to go do something. Again, that's why it says it comes back to you. What's okay with you and what is not okay with you? And then what's the action you're going to take?
Absolutely. And so when someone starts to step out of the people-pleasing identity, what changes for them? What are they going to see happen?
Well, first of all, it's really scary when you shed an identity, right? Something that you've
Totally.
owned your whole life, and you're like, "Oh my gosh, who am I?"
Yeah, you're
But
going to
what
feel so
happens is
weird.
you actually feel like naked. I would say, like, that's the best way. It's like, "Oh my gosh, I am so vulnerable
Vulnerable.
and naked, and I've never had an experience like this." But what ends up happening is self-reclamation. And I know that that's like a really broad thing to say, but it really is this, "Oh my gosh, these are the things that I like. These are the things that I need. These are the things that I value." And then suddenly it's, oh, now I can actually engage in really true, authentic relationships with people because they're actually seeing me for me instead of a version of who I thought they wanted me to be. They get to see me. And the closeness that happens in those relationships. And to my point before, some will fall away, but maybe those relationships weren't meant for you in the first place. You're going to actually see a deeper connection with people because now we're not We're not functioning in a place of making sure that only they're okay. We're also okay. So we're engaging from a fuller place.
Yeah, it's like people reconnect with who they actually are, which sounds really dramatic, but it's true. It's like you start to learn about yourself. And then I remember for me when I started putting myself first, people in my life were calling me selfish. They were saying that I was only thinking about myself. And I really had to be so strong and just say, you know what, you might not understand, but this is what I need. And I have to stay true to that. And so you were spot like 100%. Like I literally felt like I was standing in a room and I was naked and everyone was looking at me and they were so uncomfortable. But eventually, when I continued doing it, I almost felt powerful in a way. It was like I felt like a little bit mischievous. It's like, oh my God, I'm taking my power back. And it doesn't really matter what anyone thinks because I need to be, if I'm not at my best, I can't be at my best for other people. And so by staying in toxic cycles like that, it prevents me from being my best for everybody else. And so I just started to shift that in my mind that people might not see it, but I believe I'm doing it for the best interest of everybody. And so it's not selfish. That's something I really struggled with.
And I'm so glad that you named that because I do think that that happens a lot is people will call it selfish. And if we're not careful, we start to internalize that and we start to doubt and we start to say, oh my gosh, am I being selfish? Which is like, I mean, gosh, it's the way to re-trigger that people pleasing like snap, right? It's like, oh my gosh, there it is. And so what I offer is shifting it into this is a self-full move. It's self-full in an effort to deepen the relationships that I have and that are meant for me. To your point, it is, it's letting go of they may not get it. They get to consider it selfish. It's not ours to change their mind. Ours is to work on ourselves and to grow and evolve so we can be our best self.
Yeah, and part of learning how to, recover from people pleasing is learning how to communicate better. And so, like, I mean, I don't want the audience to, be disrespectful because there's a difference between, not explaining and being disrespectful, but it's more about learning how to communicate effectively. And so telling someone why or what you need, instead of maybe not saying anything. That's all part of people pleasing. It's learning how to be an effective communicator and to be assertive.
Absolutely. Yes, I actually coach around communication skills routinely, and it's about how we're showing up in the room, like what type of presence we're bringing, those nonverbals, our tone, the volume we speak at, all of those elements, right? And to your point, we can communicate and we can be assertive in a respectful way. When we say our no, we don't have to be aggressive. We don't have to use a tone that's disrespectful or that's rude. We can say no in a very calm, grounded way. And the way through that is when we're connected to it. We know why we're saying no. We know that this thing really, whatever it is, we have a self boundary with it. We can then learn to manage that tone. What happens, I think, with a lot of people pleasers is resentment grows. And then when they do eventually speak up, it comes out in a very aggressive or in a with a tone that's not, it's not very grounded. It can come across as rude or disrespectful. And that's part of what we're talking about here too, is by learning to let go of those patterns, we're also dealing with the suppressed resentment. We're also dealing with the suppressed anger, and we're learning to communicate it as we need to versus holding it all together and then it coming out in some type of volcanic eruption.
Yeah, no, that's such a good point because 9 times out of 10, when someone reacts in like a really aggressive way, it has nothing to do with the situation at hand. It has everything to do with like the teapot boiling over. It's like When you're constantly sweeping all of your emotions and needs under the rug, there's eventually going to come a time where there's no room left under that rug to sweep anymore, right? And that's where there's like that trigger moment that just sets you off. And that can happen. But like, yeah, like you said, it has nothing to do with that one situation. And so for anyone listening out there, what are some, maybe let's give them three small things that they can start doing today to work towards, healing this way of living.
So I want to touch on a couple of different things. One is you mentioned the nervous system. I really would encourage people to pay attention to what their nervous system is feeling, right? Notice when you're having certain tensions in your body, because as a people pleaser, if you're starting to pick up on potential conflict, that could your nervous system's going to communicate that to you first. You're going to feel tension, and that's usually a good indication that you're about to fall into a people pleaser mode, where it's let me fix this, let me smooth this over. So that's number one. Number two is really paying attention to when you're saying yes, and what you really need to do is say no, right? Just how many yeses are there in a day? And give yourself permission to maybe add one no. Just start there. Just one no out of a course of this whole day of when you might be agreeing to things. Is there one place where you can say, I'm not going to agree to that today? And then I would also suggest, and I talk to my clients about this all the time, is really just learning to pause. I think so many of us are just go, 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 one thing after the other. Just give yourself permission to pause before speaking, pause before saying yes, pause before agreeing to something. Just somebody's asking you something. Take a breath. Give yourself time to process before responding. I think it's a way people pleasers tend to be very reactive, and it's a way to start breaking that habit of constantly reacting into giving yourself a little bit of room to really choose how you want to respond.
I love those tips. Those are brilliant. The pausing before saying yes, that is something that I struggled with for so long. I was just like, agree to everything right off the bat. And then later on, be like, oh my God, why did I do that? Like, why didn't I just take a second? Because I would have learned that I'm fully booked that day, or, I actually don't want to do that. And so the pausing, the checking in, and then just practicing, practice, practice, practice. It's just like, anything, it takes practice in order to make it natural. And eventually, people aren't going to feel guilty for saying no. They're actually going to feel empowered by it because you, like you've mentioned before, you get this clearer understanding of who you are, and it strengthens your identity because you start to learn what you can handle and what is not good for you. When you're stuck in that pattern, it's like, the world is kind of muddy and gray, and then you start seeing everything in color because you're like, oh, okay, this works for me, but this doesn't. And I know this because I've been practicing.
Yes. Oh, I love that metaphor. It goes from gray to being in color.
Oh man, what a beautiful conversation. I just really enjoyed talking with you today. I think people pleasing is such a common thing that many people do because they do not feel safe, and they haven't felt safe at some point in their life. And it can just be one thing that we learn it, but it's the awareness piece that we talked about. Being aware is the first step. Do you have any last minute thoughts on the topic today, or perhaps you could tell people a little bit more about what you do?
I would love to share just a little bit more about what I do. So I really do. I work with people one-to-one in terms of helping them understand these types of patterns, right? Where maybe you are stuck in a survival pattern, and it's through that understanding, then coaching them through, and what are we going to do about it? What's the action we're going to take? How are we going to show up differently? And I feel like I was brought to the work by my own experiences in terms of feeling called to not only take what I've experienced, but then help others. And then I've taken that to the next level by just training in many modalities to really just truly meet people where they're at.
Yeah, absolutely. So people pleasing doesn't mean you're kind. It often means you learned that being yourself wasn't safe at some point in your life. But the good news is that pattern can change. And when it does, you don't just get your energy back, you get yourself back. Tolmini, thank you for such an honest and powerful conversation.
Thank you for having me.
We will make sure to have all of her links in the show notes for easy access to more of who she is and what she does. Stay tuned for the next episode. Until next time.
If you're looking to ensure your place, Sheila's Wheels are super ace. We've got an offer that astounds. Get a gift card for £40 for brilliant home insurance deals. Go direct to Sheila's Wheels.
£40 e-gift card applies for new home essentials policies purchased direct between the 5th of March and the 28th of April 2026. See terms and conditions at SheilasWheels.com.